that they Lincoln tree. This is like it's the Ben Oak.
Right over there, Brad King ran a horse hot off in this canal here when he was swimming about 40 years ago and drowned both himself and the horse.
Oh, boy.
We drug him out way down, several miles downstream.
What do you call that place? Dead Man's Pond?
This is tape 2 of April 12th. Is that what you said? April 12th, interview with Mabier Carlton at Sidell, his home in Sidell.
We were talking about Utopia.
If we were explaining the origin of some of these names of these rural communities, in the reference to the railroad that went between Braden and Arcadia, that's where some of your names came there with Averna and Edgeville. Sidell is a result of the rail road that was put in between Sarasota and Fort Ogden. And there were several other stops along the route there. The main one that comes to mind now is Utopia, which is inside what is now the Hi-Hat Ranch. There were several others along that line there. There were three or four staging points. I've got a list of them somewhere, but Utopia is the only one that can come to mind.
You said that Old Mayaca has always been a hamlet. What would you say makes it that way?
Well, right there is some of the highest ground, well, the highest ground in Sarasota County, is right there in that Old Mayaca area. And, of course, you build on the higher ground, and that's one reason. And also, you know, the old Mayaca to Venice night trail was there. You know, where they used to go from the Mayaca River into Venice.
No, I didn't know about that.
Yeah. In fact, there's part of the old trail that we're preserving on the piece of ground that the county bought off of Hall Road where we're going to put our water treatment plant. Uh-huh. And that's really one of the old historic trails. There was the old night trail that went from Mayaca to Venice.
Accent, I...
But what do you feel about, you're saying country to you? Because you lived here when...
23, no, I've only been here 23 years, but I think people's idea of country now is so much different than it was 23 years ago even. Because, you know, country now is, people have moved out, so everybody's country or wants to be country. So it's different.
You're saying it's a lot more popular now.
Yes.
So, you know, that's true because my mom was from the country, West Virginia, and she tried to get away from that.
Sure.
She didn't want to be known as a hillbilly. In fact, when she married my dad, you know, he was a city folk. And
I bet she doesn't feel that way now.
She still does.
Does she?
Yeah. She doesn't like the country. She she said she's had enough of, you know, outdoor plumbing. You know what that
is?
Yes,
of course.
And barefoot, you know, and having to eat squirrels.
Gosh,
that's what you could eat. But then, of course, they were in a real poor area, too. You're lucky here, and this is rich, rich cattle grazing land. It doesn't mean that you're rich, but
no, I know what you mean.
That you're
the difference.
But you're from South Carolina?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. She's switching up. My mind is going. What's significant about rural communities in general? You know, kind of the question. The first, there's a little introduction in which I'm going to show slides of some of the beautiful rivers and creeks and, you know, these wooden bridges and stuff. And, you know, what rural communities in general, what are they all about?
Well, in general, I think they have a deeper and a more realistic understanding of environmental quality. That's not to say that the urban population can't and cannot help preserve a quality environment, but you've got to live in it day in and day out, in my opinion, to really totally appreciate it and understand the proper way to manage it. Because, quite frankly, a lot of the cliches are not practical. And
some of those things.
And some of them can be counterproductive. So you have to have a practical knowledge of the area as well as an academic knowledge to really understand. I know there's been a lot of well-meaning decisions, a lot of well-meaning programs suggested that aren't practical and can be counterproductive.
Mm-hmm. You mean in things that take away the consumptive uses?
Yes, just for example, wetlands preservation is a prime example.
It's a big issue this year, too.
If I were denied the use of the wetlands for agricultural purposes, this place would cease to be an economically viable operation. I could not continue in agriculture without being able to graze the wetlands and to use them. And if that privilege was taken away from me, and at the same time, a government would not give me the privilege of converting it to some non-agricultural use, there you run into direct conflict with the state constitution, the United States Constitution. It's a reasonable use of land and a taking without just compensation. So there's a big danger of the rural areas, I see it, of being locked in between two conflicting sets of regulations. One which says you can't farm, and another one that says you can't convert to any other non-farm use. Well, that cannot happen in the ultimate analysis. If that scenario is forced as ultimate, you're going to have no rural area because you're not going to be able to economically survive, and it's all going to be urbanized. And that's one area that the environmental community and the agricultural community, if they don't sit down and work out these problems, both entities are going to end up destroying what both entities want to preserve.
You seem to infer that If you are allowed to, you and other ranchers are allowed to graze wetlands, that the benefits, the things that the environmentalists want to preserve, would be preserved.
Sure.
Like they talk about aquifer recharge. They
wow.
talk about nursery for fish and things like that. And it seems clear to me that
wildlife habitat,
yeah, well,
all kinds of different
the
things.
The cattle grazing doesn't. I mean, sure, you step on a few plants, and maybe.
And you have to be able, you know, to control the water to a certain extent. I know a few years ago there was one wetlands protection ordinance that was brought before the county commission that, if passed, would have required me to place my mineral boxes about 10 feet above the ground, which I could have fed giraffes mineral, but I could not have fed cattle.
Uh-huh.
And some of the people that proposed that had never thought about that. And I brought it up.
Uh-huh.
It's going to state that I could put no structures in the wetlands.
Yeah.
A mineral box is a structure.
Right.
Also, I would not have been able to fence my boundaries because a fence is a structure.
Yeah.
If I can't fence my boundary lines, I can't keep my cattle in. Or they'll be down in Northport.
Yeah.
So there are these practical things that sometimes are not considered, and when you jump off the deep end on some of these proposals, if they had gone through to the final analysis and had been given the force and effect of law, it would have eliminated the cattle industry.
Well,
under the guise of environmental protection.
Right. I'm just glad we've got that.
And another thing that you have to realize is that many of these environmental laws are much easier for a developer to comply with than from an agriculturalist. I cannot cluster cattle like a developer can. He can cluster his homes over in one high section of his ground and dedicate the rest of it to open space. I have to have the total acreage in order to graze the cattle. In other words, I can't take 10 head of cattle on X number of acres and take those same 10 head of cattle and make them survive on a 0.25x.
Right.
That's not the way the good Lord made them.
Right.
So the problem being is that the agriculturalist has much more trouble complying with some of these regulations than the urban developer. And it's easier to develop.
What about the idea of reserves of giving. If we think of an agriculturalist, a cattle rancher, citrus grower, basically what we're talking about here, of providing a benefit to the community, to the city people, you know, to the state, in terms of having open space, you know, that you can drive out here. Maybe you can't jump the fence and go over the guy's land, but it's a very nice feeling to drive out into a large rural area. And of course, water recharge, you know, wetlands nursery, but in that, just, you know, the scenic easement. How do you feel about the? I don't know if you're how much you know about these new practices that are coming in of having people able to donate the scenic easement for tax purposes, for tax deductions. And basically what it sounds like to me, and I'm not real clear, it's like you promise, you donate your easement, you promise you're not going to build anything that doesn't look rural, and then you get lower taxes.
Well, it's good in theory, and it may be possible, but again, you have the inherent danger of being forced in between two sets of conflicting regulations that you and I have just previously discussed. And I'll be quite candid with you. I'm very willing to stay here in agriculture, and my kids are too. But I am not going to be locked in between two sets of regulations. One, it says I can't farm, and the other one, it says I can't urbanize and have my property rights destroyed. The Constitution protects me from that. And that is my biggest fear, and it's my greatest concern, and that's one reason I got involved in government, and I hope I've had some input at that, because I've been the first agriculturalist to sit on this Board of County Commissioners in over 40 years. And I do think that I have made some progress there to articulate the problems of agriculturalists who honestly don't want to urbanize, but who are deathly afraid of seeing our several generations worth of hard work go down the tube because of restrictive governmental regulations. And I hope that while I am county commissioner, this is one area that I'm going to be able to work some of the problems out of. So that's one problem with these easements, because if I dedicate this land in perpetuity to agriculture, and then a year or two down the road, just for example, in my citrus grove,
they freeze out.
Well, not only that, we are trying to practice water conservation.
Right.
All right, I put the drip irrigation in, and when I put the drip irrigation in, I can no longer mechanically cultivate. It's physically impossible once you put drip irrigation in to mechanically cultivate.
Right.
You have to go to herbicides.
Right.
Well, suppose the EPA or the DER wakes up one morning and says, Carlton, you cannot ever use any more herbicides.
Right.
They're detrimental to the environment. You take my herbicides away from me, and you say that I have to use low-volume irrigation. That grove is dead in 3 months. Those are the kind of regulations that I don't believe any environmentalist really wants to impose once they fully understand the ramifications. But still, I'm just as broke. That grove is just as dead, and my property rights are just as confiscated. And I haven't attempted to urbanize. I don't want to urbanize. So these things are going to have to be completely worked out before I would even consider something like that, just due to the practical aspect that I'm not going to sit here and see seven generations of work go down the tube by governmental regulation. I'm just not going to do it. And in fact, you may want to go back in the Herald Tribune Business Monday of about a month or 6 weeks ago, where Donna Johnson, I spent over half a day with Donna Johnson on this very issue, and she wrote a 2-full-page Business Monday article on this, and you may want to refer to that. It was very well written, and like I say, we spent a half a day just on that one subject alone, or close to it.
Yeah, I'll have to go back, because I realize we're getting in the a real big issue here.
It's a very big issue. It is the issue. If you want to preserve agriculture, you're going to have to give us reasonable uses of the tools to stay in agriculture. You can't take those tools away from us and expect us to remain because we can't. And you can't expect to force us to remain because Section 2 to the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution states that property cannot be confiscated without due process of law. And government does not have the resources, and I would oppose government buying up all of the rural land. And that would be the only other alternative. And I don't believe the urban population would go for that, and I won't go for it because I don't want to sell. So it's going to take some innovative thinking to work this out. The problems are not insurmountable, but the environmentalists can't go off one way, and the agriculturalists can't go off the other. Unless they walk down the same road together at the same time, it never will work.
Very much. I want everything to be gone. My refrigerator's full. All of my company is disappearing, though. Lisa's going back. The next, she's going back Saturday. And I'll probably stay up for 3 weeks. We have a